Welcome to Dark Mode, the podcast that brings you sage advice from two technology experts. But that is not just what we call ourselves. It's what our moms tell people when we return home and have to fix everything in the house. I'm your host, Luke Miani.
And I'm your host, Noah Rubin. On this show, we take questions from listeners, attempt to answer them to varying degrees of success, and maybe even have a laugh or two along the way.
It's possible. And I'll tell you what. We had more than a few laughs in that house.
We sure did. I'll give some context for people that weren't in the pre-show, and I guess people that are listening and don't have any visual. I'm in my childhood bedroom right now because I'm at home visiting my family, and quite a few memories in here. Quite a few old Apple products in the boxes. Well, I guess the products aren't in the boxes, but quite a few old Apple product boxes on the shelves and stuff behind me. And yes, you know, it's some good memories in here.
What a time. That's where the technology expert was put into the podcast hosts. That doesn't really make sense.
I get what you're going for there. I'll give it to you.
Yeah, you know what I mean. Point being, what a time.
Indeed.
Let's see, when was the first time that we would have hung out at your parents' house? Probably.
It would have been 8th grade.
Yeah, fall of 2012. It's almost 13 years. It's kind of freaking me out.
I think it's too much, actually.
Same, I agree.
Like, I think we've had our course. We've run our course.
Yeah. I was saying.
I was saying, like, you know, 13 years is like, it's enough of us. Like, you know, see you later.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Your friendship has run its course.
Yeah. Like, you can, you know, it's been long enough. We can, you know, move on.
I agree. We can see other people.
Yeah. We don't need to be exclusive.
Oh, that's so good. All right. Well, let's see. We got to start with the new chip. We got to start with M3 Ultra.
Oh, okay. Okay.
We'll keep it short and sweet because basically the only reason M3 Ultra exists is if you want to get half a terabyte of RAM to do some big ol' LLMs. That's about it. It does. I mean, look, as a video editor, will I export my videos faster? Yes. Is it worth the exorbitant amount of money that I've paid? No, not at all. So that's fun. The only upside is that if I do decide, and I still haven't figured this out, I guess I'm within the return policy for the M3 Ultra, but I'm trying to debate whether I should keep it or not. Because the thing is, if I keep it, then I have to sell my Mac Pro. And like a little more, maybe like a year and a half ago is when I finally got my Mac Pro set up to be perfect with my 8 terabyte internal SSD, 24 terabytes of internal hard drive. Right now I have 0 external storage and it is bliss. But unfortunately, if the Mac Studio becomes my main machine, I guess I'm kind of out of luck until the third-party storage upgrades are available.
Yeah, I think I was kind of surprised to see the M3, what was it, M4 Max and M3 Ultra, right, came out at the same time?
Yeah, no, well, the M3 Ultra is, the M4 Max was not new, but the Ultra came out at the same time as the Max in the Mac Studio.
Okay, maybe that's what I'm thinking of. But seeing a new M3 chip when there were already like M4 chips out. I thought that was very interesting. Like, I guess just from a marketing perspective of just like, that's the best chip, but it's M3, so it sounds like it's an older chip, which it isn't. It's just kind of a little bit of a marketing mess for Apple there.
Yeah, and the thing is, I remember us specifically talking about this before. I guess it was after the M2 Ultra, after the M3 chips came out. We were talking about the timing of this, and we were like, "Well, there's no way that they could you know, release a chip after they've already moved on to the next generation. They would never do that. And they didn't. And then all of a sudden they said, ah, let's do it. But here's the problem that you get with that is the Ultra chips have always been a bit of a tough sell for normal people. It was always kind of like a, well, if you need the best, you can get it, but it's going to cost you, right? And the problem with the M3 Ultra is that your starting point is the M3 Max. So instead of in the past where it was like, hey, do you want one M2 Max or do you want two M2 Max to form an Ultra? So obviously you knew when buying that you weren't going to get perfect scaling. It was never going to be, you know, 2x performance because there's two chips, because you've got the interconnect and, you know, you're scaling two entire standalone chips together. But the problem is now you add the imperfect scaling to the fact that the chips that you're combining are already around 10 to 15-ish% slower than the M4 Max. And I mean, if you're losing 20% just due to scaling, and then you're losing 20% on each of those chips just from being the previous generation, the difference between the M3 Ultra and the M4 Max is not as big as it should be, even though the price gap is enormous.
Yeah, that's kind of the problem with that chip. It definitely, like you said, there's obviously the interconnect and some overhead with that, but also just like a lot of things that you do on the computer don't necessarily scale super well. Like if you have mm-hmm. all of these CPU and GPU cores, is the stuff that you're doing able to take full advantage of that? In a lot of cases, you know, maybe it's not, or it's not twice as much power. So I agree. It is kind of weird to see, you know, obviously it's an Ultra chip and it's an older one. So I feel like it's kind of a hard sell, but I guess this is what happens with the cadence that Apple is going at, because obviously, you know, this Ultra chip where they're putting two Max chips together, I'm sure that it takes some time for their supply chains to ramp up to this. And I'd guess this chip is probably pretty low yield because it's such a complicated chip and it's so expensive. It's probably pretty low yield. So that's kind of the problem, that by the time they get to the point that they're ready, meanwhile, their base level chip, they're constantly pushing on that one because that one goes into a lot more products and it's a lot, I'd say it's probably more important overall in the grand scheme of things, probably a more important chip for Apple. And so it just kind of messes up this timeline. And then I guess their marketing department kind of gets stuck a little bit with trying to juggle this. And, you know, you get this chip that's a little bit outdated. It's kind of outdated on arrival. It's still powerful, but it's kind of outdated. It's a hard, I don't know how Apple fixes the issue, because it really is that timeline to get from the regular Pro, Max, Ultra, get all the way up there. It does take time.
Yeah. And I mean, this is part of what worries me about Apple Silicon, is when you look at the big legacy manufacturers, right? They have a huge range of processors and they go up to very, very high. I mean, you've got your AMD Threadrippers, you've got Core i9s with, you know, loads of cores and tons of performance. The problem that Apple is running into is that it seems like they don't have a super big incentive to make those really powerful chips. And I know that if they put some time and money into the R&D, they could absolutely smoke. They could build the most powerful CPU in the entire world. I don't doubt it at all. The problem is, to your point, the yields get low, and by the time you get that far up the ladder, it gets really, really expensive, at least the way that they're doing it now. Because the thing is, the M4 chip, that's broadly applicable. It goes in everything. It's going to go in, you know, everything from a MacBook Air Pro, iMac, Mac Mini, iPad Pro. Eventually, it'll probably go into an iPad regular in like 2 or 3 years. They're going to be making that chip for years, and they're going to put it in hundreds of millions of devices, probably. Maybe not hundreds of millions, but lots and lots of devices, right? And the Pro chip will probably also be very popular. It's in a well-priced Mac Mini. It's in the MacBook Pro. And those things sell very well. The problem is once you even get to the Max chip, it starts to become a much more niche product. How many people really buy Mac Studios? Not a ton. How many people are really buying an M4 Max MacBook Pro? The cheapest one, the cheapest M4 Max MacBook Pro is $3,700. There's not that many people that are going to be buying that chip. And then, let alone putting two of them together, I'm sure to your point, the yields are incredibly low and the scaling isn't particularly great. For example, Final Cut Pro rendering. This is something that I've noticed across the board with Apple Silicon, and it's really weird. The M4 Pro can render a 30-minute 4K timeline in 3 minutes 50 seconds. The M4 Max, 3 minutes 35. So already, jumping from the Pro to the Max, you're only getting 15 seconds. But the M3 Ultra, the full one, the 80-core GPU, 32-core CPU, is 3 minutes 31. So you're only getting 4 seconds over the M4 Max, even though if you compare the prices, it's $3,000.
Yeah. I mean, that's just, I guess, another example of the scaling not really working. And obviously, it depends on what you're trying to do with these chips. If you're a video editor, you're really going to care about that, and maybe it's not worth it for you. Maybe there's other applications where it is more worth it to you. So it really depends. But also, I'll say, going back to your other point about, saying, like, for example, the M4 being a very broadly applicable chip, and going all the way up to the Ultra being obviously a lot less. I mean, at the end of the day, we made this comparison, or you sort of mentioned, like, AMD and Intel. At the end of the day, Apple really is a consumer electronics company, and they're building these processors in-house because it probably saves them money. It's probably more efficient. They have more control over the products. They can build these sort of, hardware, software go really well together. It makes a lot of sense why they're doing it. But at the end of the day, they really are primarily a consumer electronics company. I mean, you look at the stuff that sells the most is the entry-level stuff, and that's for obvious reasons. So when you compare it, like, Intel, AMD have huge range, everything from super incredibly basic, like cheap laptop netbook chips, all the way up to server hardware and $5,000 gaming machines and all that stuff. But obviously, Apple isn't really a processor company. They're not a CPU company. They're a consumer electronics company. And so because the most use is in the sort of lower tier, that seems to be where you get a lot of, like even the M4, like the lowest tier processor is really, really good. It's incredible, even for the lowest one. And obviously you get more as you go up, but it's just such a strong starting point too. And it makes sense because that's what Apple, that's what Apple is selling. That's what they're building.
Right. And I think that's a really good point, because at the end of the day, if you're Intel, if you're AMD, if you're NVIDIA, it makes sense to develop chips on the high end because, like you said, you can use them in a server. You can use them in these, like, massive CPU and GPU clusters. Apple doesn't have that. So they're developing – it's not a multi-purpose development system. It's not like they can make one version of this chip for server applications and then take a core off, put an iGPU and some, like, video encoders and make it into a Core i9. No, they just have to make a straight up consumer level chip that's really, really expensive. And for it to be worth it, then yeah, it's gotta be incredibly expensive. That's just unfortunately the way that we're gonna have to deal with it. And I don't know, dude. I think that ultimately, I mean, obviously, look, there's not that many people that are buying Ultra chips in the first place. So I guess it's not a huge issue. But at the same time, you kind of want Apple to have these incredible, aspirational, powerful products. I mean, we've talked about this before, but a halo car, that's what a lot of car makers do to say, hey, look, this is something that's really incredible and impressive that we make. But where Apple is going right now, it seems like they're putting most of their effort into mediocre updates of mid-range devices. I don't know. It's kind of across the board, right? We see that with the iPhone 16e. We see that with the iMac. They don't even they stopped. They couldn't be bothered to make the large screen iMac or an iMac Pro. They've gone down to the iMac basically being a novelty in the lineup at this point. And I don't know. On the one hand, none of these products are bad, but Apple has always been an aspirational brand. They've always been the company that people have looked up to and thought, oh my gosh, everything that they do is done so well and I want it. And part of the reason that they did that was because they didn't make cheap devices. Now, nothing that Apple makes is particularly cheap, but it does seem like they're more focused on chip swapping an iPad that nobody really cares about without bothering to redesign it, as opposed to saying, hey, even though this is the mid-range iPad Air, we're going to put a ton of effort into it and make it really, really good. Old Apple probably would have done that. And there would have been a year or two where the iPad Air would have been better than the Pro. And then they would have made the Pro better and it balances out. But now it's like, it feels like they're allergic to disrupting the pricing structure. And so they inherently make their lesser products just feel worse because they don't want, oh, we couldn't possibly have the iPad Air be a better value than the Pro. That would never be doable. No. We must make the Air worse.
Yeah, and like to an extent, I get the idea. Like if these products are like set up in that way to be like, yeah, if you want the better one, you pay more to get the fancier product. But like, I think I agree with you that the overall thing that like Apple, and I know we've talked about this, about just like Apple being kind of lazy or kind of boring, whatever it is, with a lot of their products. And I just realized, did we talk about the MacBook Air yet, or did that happen after the last episode?
No, we haven't talked about that yet. I actually have a fully done MacBook Air review. Unfortunately, it's quite late now, but I've been having a lot of issues with sponsors, and it's been a very rough month for me, to be perfectly honest, because it's just every single video I'm fighting tooth and nail with sponsors to like, you know, get them out. And I almost had three unsponsored videos in a row. And I know that people reading the YouTube chats are always like, oh, sponsors. Well, guess what? There's no content without the sponsors. And I'm trying to do a lot of content and interesting things. And I can't really do that if I don't have any income, because AdSense ain't what it used to be. And if I was relying off of AdSense only, I would be broke, flat broke. But the long and the short of it is, yes, the M4 MacBook Air is out. I think I have an interesting angle on it. Hopefully people will watch it, even though it's late as hell. But the thing is, I don't want to spoil the video too much because it's hopefully going to come out in like a day or two. The new MacBook Air, it's not exciting. It's exactly the problem that you're just describing, but it is still really good, if that makes sense.
Yeah, so that's what I was going to say, because I feel like, and I forget what the other product is that I was going to compare it to, but there was some other product that they did a refresh of like a couple weeks ago, maybe it was a month ago, and that one was really boring. And I feel like the MacBook Air, I'm not saying it's exciting, but when I saw that, I was like, you know, okay, this is actually pretty solid. They had a couple of decent upgrades and they dropped the price by $100. I was like, that's a pretty solid. And then I thought about getting a MacBook Air again, like I always do, and I'm not going to do it, but I did have to think about it again. So they got me there, of course. At least
they got you thinking. That's half the battle.
Yep.
Yeah, no, I mean, you're right. It's again, nothing revolutionary, And the MacBook Air used to be a revolutionary product back when it, in the early days, it was the first unibody MacBook. It was the first device with SSD. It was the thing that got rid of the CD drive, right? The MacBook Air was an incredibly influential product. But nowadays, we're kind of resigned to the fact that the MacBook Air is a good laptop that is honestly more powerful than most people need, but it's not a superlative, right? It used to be the Air was the thinnest laptop in the world. And then, okay, well, no, it's not the thinnest, but it is, I mean, at this point, it's just the cheaper product. Same thing with the iPad Air. That's another product that has had that same path. The iPad Air was, holy crap, this is the thinnest iPad. It's like this crazy advancement, new design. Now, it's a worse version of the iPad Pro with less features. And the same thing is arguably true of the MacBook Air, except for the fact that it is just kind of like the default MacBook now. It kind of replaced the MacBook no suffix, the plastic one, not the aluminum one, which I want them to bring back. The 12-inch MacBook, that, sorry, I'm kind of all over the place here. The 12-inch MacBook, I think that demonstrates exactly what's wrong with Apple now, because they made that product and it sucked, but man, did they really try. And that was, I don't know, it feels like they haven't tried that hard in a long time.
I loved that 12-inch MacBook because you had one, or I think you had like a few, like you had one at different times. I have one now. But of course, you got to have every Mac. But I remember like a while ago, I guess maybe when it was new or a couple years after it was new, I remember that you had one and I was playing around on it a little bit, and it's really cute. And I agree with you. It's like they really tried to make this like super thin, but also premium. I think it was almost like what the iPhone Air is supposed to be. I don't know if we want to go into that territory, but it was like,
yes,
that like premium, but small. And mm-hmm. I really liked it.
Yeah. And you know what else was really interesting about it? I just grabbed mine, which by the way, it is still 10 years on, almost actually 10 years this month. That's when this thing came out. Can you believe that? Look at this device. There is still, to this day, nothing like it that exists. And the thing is, now would be the perfect time to do something like this. But we have to remember, it wasn't just that this was a bold computer. It was the fact that this was a trend setting. Every single part of it was new. Okay, this was the first butterfly keyboard. This was the first force touch trackpad. It was a new display technology. It was USB-C. This was a completely game-changing product. When Tim Cook said, we reinvented the notebook, that was not a lie, okay? He was absolutely correct about that. And look, did they miss the mark? Yes. In the Intel days, they were being very, very ambitious. But that is what they've always been. The original MacBook Air was ambitious and sucked. Okay? The original MacBook Air, and I again don't want to spoil too much. If you watched a YouTube video on that thing, it would throttle and the Core 2 Duo would cut in half. It would run as a single core. It had the hard drive out of an iPod. They had to redesign the MagSafe connector because it was at an angle. It was a terrible product. But you know what they did? They got the feedback. They redesigned it in 2010. And that was the design that we kept for like 8 years. But they never did that with the 12-inch MacBook. They released it. It wasn't great. They updated it. They gave it 2 spec bumps, and then they killed it. They didn't try to say, look, we can make this work. We can tweak it. We can improve it. We can redesign it. They just gave up. What the heck?
I didn't even realize that was 10 years old, which I guess it makes sense, like, if I think about it. But like, also, if you look at that thing, like when you were just holding it up and like going around, like that really is the blueprint for like the current MacBook Air and a lot of current computers. It's the super thin, the all USB-C, even the keyboard. Obviously, we all know about the butterfly keyboard, like what happened, but it sort of paved the way for what we eventually have now. And like all of that, it really was. And, you know, also to your point, like now's the time that they could bring it back if they wanted to. And I feel like with the MacBook Air, you know, I guess Apple Silicon, when each device got its Apple Silicon redesign, that was, I think, the last time that each device was particularly interesting. And so this was back, you know, 2021, 2022, you know, whenever those redesigns came out. But like, you know, the new MacBook Pro and the new MacBook Air and all that, those were, maybe they weren't completely game changing, but they were pretty, they were significant compared to the Intel versions. And now for a while, you know, I guess we've talked about this, it's only been a few years and Apple Silicon lasts longer and whatever. But I agree, like the new MacBook Air with M4 is not exciting, but it's a couple of decent upgrades. And that new color, if I were to get the MacBook Air, I get it in the new light blue color. It's a little bit light for my taste. It's a little bit, do you have it?
I do. Yeah, I can grab it. It's honestly, I don't really like the color. I think it's a little too light to your point, and it's kind of gray. It's not like it's not vibrant enough, I think.
I wish that Apple would do a better job with those colors, because sometimes they really come through with the colors and it looks great, like on the iMac. But a lot of the time, the colors are so like pale and muted that you can barely tell what the color is. And I wish they just had, yeah, like you're holding that up and I would not, right now, I would not think that that's blue. I would not think that's blue.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's sort of like, I would say if the iMac is juice, this is like that, we put some slices of fruit in the water. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, look, this is a brand new product, granted 2022 design, but still recent. Stack that with the 12-inch MacBook. The MacBook is thinner. 10-year-old product, and it is thinner. And the footprint. People don't realize this. They say, oh, well, you don't need a 12-inch MacBook because you have a MacBook Air. Look at the difference in footprint.
That's what 1-inch will do for you. You know,
one inch can't underestimate. Does mean a lot.
Can't underestimate even 1-inch.
And like the weight, I mean, people, if you've never held a 12-inch MacBook, if you've got $100 to burn, go buy a used one on eBay. They're really cheap now, and you'll see what I mean. This thing still feels futuristic. Now, when you use it, it feels like crap. Slow as hell, overheats. It's awful. But it looks incredible still to this day. And I think that I don't know. It's tough because the MacBook Air is good. I think realistically what we do need is a third product, because we're in a bit of a weird spot as it pertains to the MacBook, because they are the best that they've ever been. They're the most reliable. They have the best battery life. They are incredibly powerful, power efficient, and really quiet. And they've got great screens. They've got ports. The keyboards don't suck. They are objectively the best that they've ever been. But it doesn't feel like Apple is taking those risks and pushing those boundaries. And that's what made you really want Apple products in the past. It wasn't that it was, you know, the best value product. It was that it was crazy. And it was cool. And it was beautiful. And it was something that you just wanted, even if it sucked. The original MacBook Air, people wanted those, even though they sucked. The current MacBook Air is the perfect MacBook Air. That's kind of the thesis of my video. This is the first time since the iPad Air has existed that it has fulfilled its promise. If you go watch Steve Jobs, when he unveiled the original MacBook Air, he said that he wanted this thing to be the perfect laptop for everybody. No sacrifice to performance, no sacrifice to size, just everything. And this MacBook Air is that. And I say that even compared to the M1, M2, and M3, it's better. right? Because the M1, great machine, incredible value, probably the best of the previous Apple Silicon MacBook Airs. But it was the old design. We all kind of knew it was going to be redesigned. And it had 128 gigs of storage at base. So that was a little tough. And the M2 came out. Great new design, but there was the issue with the storage. Remember, they had a single NAND chip, and it was really slow, and people were like, oh, why'd they do this? Then the M3 came out, but it was more expensive. The M2 was $1,199, so that was an expensive machine. Then the M3 came out at $1,099 with the M2 at $999, so it was like, okay, I guess it's okay, but it's still not the best price. But now you get 16 gigs. You get 256 of fast storage. You get an M4 chip, and it's $999. Boom. No compromise.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a great machine, and it's the one, you know, we've talked about this before, about, like, trying to recommend, you know, people ask us for recommendations of what to buy, and it's so easy to recommend the MacBook Air to most people because it's just such a good machine, and it's such a good value. And I guess, like, to the point, yeah, Apple isn't really super trying anything innovative that much these days. I mean, obviously there was, like, Vision Pro. Got to give them credit for trying that. Didn't really work out, at least not yet. Maybe that could be a MacBook Air kind of thing, where the first one was, like, really not very good, and it had a lot of problems, and it wasn't super usable. And then as long as Apple puts the effort, I think that's almost sort of the test of to see if Apple, the current Apple, is still the way that it used to be. Because obviously in the past, when Apple had a smaller market share and they were a little bit newer of a company, I'm not saying they were brand new, but, like, a little bit newer of a company, they had more to prove. Like, yeah, they were trying these big things, whereas now they're so established and they're so huge that they, you know, whether it's because they're so established or because there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of, you know, playing it, keeping it, you know, on the safe side, like, they're not doing as much anymore. And so I feel like maybe the Vision Pro could kind of be that test of, like, look, they actually did try something that was, like, super innovative, like, one of the biggest leaps that Apple has probably ever taken, or at least in the recent time, it's a leap that they took. And it was really a leap because, unlike something like Apple Silicon, where you know it's going to be better, like, this thing, you didn't necessarily know, and they took the leap.
Right.
And so the question is, are they going to keep, I don't want to pivot to Vision Pro right now, but just to say that if they do keep that going, that's sort of maybe a good indicator that old Apple spirit is still there. And if they give up on it, maybe not the best sign.
No, I think that's a good point. I think you're right that the Vision Pro was that leap, but They've already seemed to be kind of like, I mean, it almost felt within a month that they were kind of backing off, because when they teased it, it was like, this is the future. And then they were like, there's a new app with the dinosaur. That's pretty cool. You know, it's like, okay, all right. I can already see that their foot is kind of halfway out the door. You know, old Apple with the MacBook Air, they said, you know, heck, we're doing it. No more CDs. Get rid of them. And it was only a matter of time before the rest of the stuff followed. The MacBook, right? We just talked about that. This thing set the design trend. The butterfly keyboard, the Force Touch trackpad, USB-C, they put that on everything. But this was kind of like the first step. Doesn't necessarily feel like that with the Vision Pro, especially with their spatial video, right? They didn't even give us, they put a 48 megapixel ultrawide sensor, and we didn't get 4K spatial video. Because people probably don't use it. It's like, yeah, because the whole thing that Apple has done in the past 30 years is they create the trend. They don't follow it, you know? The MP3 player was an existing product. They made the best one, the most exciting one, and the one that people wanted. And that's what they should have done with Vision Pro. But they haven't got the recipe right. And I saw an interesting comment here that I think is worth talking about, especially with Vision Pro. Elizabeth says, I don't buy cool stuff. I buy boring products and hold on to them for as long as possible. What is the business case for a cool product? I can't risk buying something cool with my hard-earned money. It's a great point. However, I would argue that there is very much a business case for a cool product. It's the Halo car that we were talking about. The 12-inch MacBook was a visionary product. It was a product that sets a trend. And the thing is, it was also done intelligently, because they know that there are people out there who aren't interested in cutting-edge, risky products. They want boring things that will work for as long as possible. And that's why, at the same time as that MacBook, you could buy a very established MacBook Pro or a very, very established MacBook Air. They had their cake. It was, you could kind of have your cake and eat it too, right? You could buy your safe, dependable MacBook Air, or you could buy the flashier, cooler, innovative MacBook. And that, I think, is something that Apple, in many points in their history, has had that choice. You can get the new exciting one, but there's a safe backup option if that's a bit much for you. Now, though, you've got Vision Pro. Outside of that, what is the, is there anything else that would fit that bill? I don't know.
Yeah, I think to this point, like, I completely agree with you. And another sort of idea that I'll say is, like, these products that we call cool products right now, in a couple years, they won't be the cool product. They'll be the normal product, right? Take the MacBook mm-hmm. Air that Steve Jobs pulled out of the manila envelope, right? That's like for a while, that was like the cool product. It was more expensive and it wasn't as good, but it was like the cool product. Now that's the default. And for a long time, that's been the default. The MacBook Air has been the default. It was the cool product. Now it's the default. By putting these cool products out, maybe these companies know that a lot of people aren't going to buy them, or they're not going to sell as well as the more established ones. But they sort of start the trend going. So things like, USB-C on the MacBook, or removing the headphone jack from, what was that, the iPhone 7, I think it was. They removed the headphone jack. And like AirPods, think about AirPods. Like before AirPods existed, think about wireless Bluetooth earbuds compared to after AirPods. Like today, think about that for a second. I'll also throw in, not even Apple related, we might have talked about this on the podcast, but Luke and Sam and I went to the unveiling of, not unveiling, but the global launch of a see-through television that costs $60,000. It is $60,000 for, it was an 80-something inch 4K.
I think it was a 75.
75, okay. So it was a 70. It wasn't even that big. It was a 70-something inch 4K TV, and the gimmick was that it was mostly see-through. It was kind of a weird, like, distortion, whatever, but it was kind of see-through. And that's the thing, like, that's like, forget Vision Pro. How about a $60,000 TV that, like, I would argue that the whole gimmick is kind of useless. But the point is, they launched, they announced this thing, and they sold like three or four of them that night. And so there were people that were buying this thing. And the point is that this thing comes out, people see it, it enters, right? That means that they had to manufacture them. I'm sure it was very expensive and not, you know, like a, they didn't have an established factory line to do that. But the point is that they were able to make it. They put it out. It exists. It's in the market. People know about it. Some crazy people bought them. But 10 years from now, we'll see transparent screens, maybe in TVs, but maybe in other things like glasses and smart mirrors and smart like windshields on your car, whatever it is. And like, and then it won't be the cool thing anymore. It'll be the common thing that we're all used to. But like, you have to start somewhere, and you know, that's where you start. Yeah. You start with it being the cool thing.
Yeah, and to be the cool thing doesn't necessarily mean that it has to have a completely breakthrough in new technology. I think that's what made Steve Jobs so successful. And this comment is really interesting, because they say, you know, 1990s Apple, before Steve came back, was all about boring products. That was their entire bread and butter. Their share price bottomed out at 10 cents a share in 1997. Imagine if you bought Apple then.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have. What were we doing? We were busy being negative 1 years old. We should have been buying Apple stock. Oh, terrible.
Damn.
Terrible financial decision on our part. But the point there is, it was Steve Jobs. It was those risky, interesting, bold products that brought a lot of excitement back to Apple. And the thing is, we all look back on the 90s as like, oh, it was a dumpster fire. Apple did some really good stuff in the 90s. That was when they, I mean, the PowerBook, right? That was not, Steve Jobs had no involvement in the invention of the PowerBook. And that was literally the first modern laptop and led directly to where we are now. That was done without Steve Jobs. There was a lot of crap, for sure, but there were good products. But why didn't they succeed? It wasn't because the products were necessarily all terrible. It was because they weren't interesting. And it's different now, right? Because Apple then was a small company. Now they're a, you know, they're a pretty major, almost you could argue too big to fail company. But I personally don't think the too big to fail exists. And every company that has seemed like they were on top of the world forever has eventually fallen. Could Apple be the next IBM or General Electric or Boeing? You know, when you are on top and complacency sets in, and I'm not saying that Apple is there, but if it happens, not great. So I think that you're right.
Yeah, I think I definitely agree. Like, maybe Apple isn't necessarily complacent yet. I mean, you got to give them credit for Apple Silicon and all the great stuff, and that was only a couple years ago. But you know, there hasn't been too much like super groundbreaking recently, except probably Vision Pro, which you know, we know how that turned out. So the question is, like, you know, like I can see it. I wouldn't call them complacent yet, but like I would keep an eye on it. Like, whereas a couple of years ago, I'd be like, oh yeah, Apple's like hitting out of the park. Like, all these new Macs are great. And there were other time periods in the past where you did the same thing. Hopefully this is just a slightly more boring time period, and then things will pick up again. And that's fine. Like Apple has, you know, the Macs go usually in like 4-ish year cycles, and maybe when you're in the middle and towards the end of that, it's a little bit more boring than when you're at the beginning. So like, it's okay for it to be a little bit boring sometimes and exciting sometimes, but it's just something to keep an eye on, especially as the timeline gets wider. Like, if you get these longer periods of being a little more boring, maybe it's not ideal.
Yeah. And hey, you know what? Maybe this year we'll eat our words, because we've been hearing a lot of rumors about the iPhone 17 maybe finally being a little bit more exciting. And in fact, I wanted to say this actually on our previous episode when we were talking about the iPhone 16e. I personally believe that Apple should have made a more expensive phone. I think that would have been a better business move than making that kind of weird budget phone. I know this is maybe a crazy thought, but I genuinely think that if Apple were to come out with that fabled iPhone Ultra that was like super chungus, big battery, lasts like 2 days between charge, you know, absolutely no holds barred, best iPhone ever, even if it's $1,500, I guarantee that would do more for the iPhone than an iPhone 16e ever will. Maybe the 16e makes them more money in the end, but I think if you want to shake things up, you got to do something a little bit out there. Now, it seems like the Ultra probably not going to exist, but in its place, we have the iPhone Air. Now, what's interesting is everything that we were just talking about with the 12-inch MacBook, theoretically, the iPhone Air could be that for the iPhone, right?
Yeah, and I wonder in that case, like, what would it be? And maybe this is something we can brainstorm a little bit. I don't know if you have any ideas, but like, what would that be? The MacBook, the MacBook from 10 years ago, really, like, you know, you put that thing next to a modern Mac and you can really see, you put that thing next to the M1 MacBook Air that used that old design, and you really see, you know, how you got from how that was the trendsetter and to get to where we are today. What would the iPhone Air do for the iPhone in that way? How could you do that? Okay, let's hear it.
I have a thought, and this is not what they're going to do. because we have rumors for the iPhone 17 Air, and we could talk about what those will be. But if Apple really wanted to recapture the spirit of the 12-inch Retina MacBook, what they would need to do is create an iPhone 17 Air that has, ideally, I would say you got to push a boundary. The thing that came to mind first of all is cameras. I think an iPhone 17 Air that would really shake things up would be one that has no camera bump, flush. That would change the game, right?
That's a good point. When is the last time that we had a flush camera? Was it the 5S?
Yeah.
That was a long time ago.
It was almost 12 years since we have had... The iPhone 6 had a very small camera bump, and they've only gotten bigger every single year for the past 12 years. So that would do... That is exactly what I'm talking about, right? And look, I'm sure it would be a compromise. It wouldn't be as good of a camera because it would have to fit in a really thin iPhone. But like, imagine, thinnest iPhone ever made... Same battery as the Pro, because it's a bigger screen, so it's basically like the same battery, but like flattened out a little bit. So theoretically, it could have the decent battery life, thinnest iPhone ever, and no camera bump. Dude, I would ditch the Pro for that. I would. In the same way that when the 12-inch MacBook came out, if I was in the position that I am now then, and I could have actually justified it, I would have bought one of those for sure. Even if it was less practical or slower or whatever, I would have said, that is an incredible product and I care about incredible products and I'm going to give it a shot. But right now where we are with the iPhone Air, I'm not sure. What do you think?
I think it's a good point. When you're thinking about these things, you have to think about, Because what, like, my first reaction to that was like, yeah, that would be really cool. But I'm like the thing you have to think about is, if the iPhone Air is going to do for the iPhone what the MacBook did for the MacBook lineup, it basically it's going to define what the future is going to look like for that product. Almost like, I guess, the iPhone 10. Like when Apple announced the iPhone 10, they said this is going to be the next 10 years of the iPhone. And it really was. If you take an iPhone 10 and you put it next to an iPhone 16, you can, I mean, like, obviously the new one it has more stuff, but like it's very, very similar at the end of the day. And so, you know, then the question becomes like, if the iPhone Air is going to be like that for the next 10 years of the iPhone, I agree. The flush camera bump, or like flush cameras, because no one does that right now. Google has that big bar thing that goes all the way across. Samsung, I think each camera has like a little like pop out, like they're all raised, so it's whatever. Like, I don't think anyone's really, or none of the major players are really doing like super flush cameras. So if they could do flush cameras, what if they could do something about the notch? I know that there's a dynamic island, and that makes sense as the stuff, but imagine like when you're watching videos, you're looking at photos or something where you really don't want that notch to be there. If it could just disappear and you just, you know, like they can have the Dynamic Island software running when it's supposed to be running, but when you're doing something where you wouldn't want to see it, then it could fully disappear and you get the full screen. That's another thing I think that would be the next 10 years of iPhone. Like that's something they would really want to do.
Yeah, no, and you'd think that they would be, I don't know, because to your point, we haven't had that in a while. The iPhone 10 being the next 10 years of iPhone. Well, I mean, theoretically, by their own math, we've got like 2 more years of that. It's like, okay, that's a long time. That's a very long time. And, you know, obviously an iPhone 16 does look different than an iPhone 10, but it wasn't, you know, all at once. It was like very small design changes over the course of 8 years. And I think that the iPhone Air, as it is rumored now, doesn't really do that. I think that if you're going to make the argument for a third product that, you know, kind of shakes things up, you kind of got to take a bit of a bolder stance. It's actually kind of funny now that we're talking about this because it really is such a similar parallel to the MacBook. The only difference is the you can kind of switch the nomenclature, right? For when the 12-inch MacBook came out, the Air was the standard model and the no suffix was the new one. Now it's like the regular 16 and then the Air is the new one. But functionally, the products are kind of doing the same job. You know, it's you can buy a regular iPhone 16, that's fine. You can buy a Pro, that's fine. But what if there was something in the middle that appealed to specifically high engagement, aesthetically minded individuals, right? I think that's what the Air is supposed to be. But you sent me this this image or this tweet specifically about the rumored design for the iPhone 17 and Air. And would you like to start? Because you found this. What was your initial reaction?
This looks like something that I would design. If I were in charge of designing the iPhone and I put in my very best effort, this is what I would come up with because I'm terrible at designing stuff. For the people that are watching and you can't see the image, first of all, you should go look it up, see what the iPhone 17 rumor is. But it's basically the camera bump goes all the way across the screen. And so the LiDAR and the flash are separate on the other side of the phone relative to the cameras. And then there's this like duotone. So the area below that where the Apple logo is like a different color from the back of the phone. And especially on the Air model, which only has one camera. So the camera bar is very thin. And then there's this like empty space. And then that duotone starts. It looks so bad. Apple, I texted you this like not that long ago and I was like, there's no way Apple can launch this. And then you were like, well, it seems like they kind of are. So what do you know?
So from what I've heard from the rumors, the camera bars will probably not be that color. I think that's the most inaccurate part of this this concept, right? So as far as I can tell from the rumors that I've seen and the people that I've talked to, picture let's start with the Pro, okay? I think it's going to be blacked out. So instead of what we currently have, which is the matte, the frosted back, and then the raised section is clear, but the backing, the whole back of the phone is the same color, this would be effectively a blacked out camera square. That rectangular area up there. So I guess theoretically that means you wouldn't see the LiDAR. It might look a little bit cleaner. I don't know about the flash because it's kind of like – it just seems like kind of pointless. Like why did you just kind of stretched it out and put the flash on the other side? For what? But I think with a blacked out appearance it would look a little bit better. The biggest problem that I have with it though is having the triangle camera – in that big rectangular space, it kind of feels like, well, why are they all on that side? Why did they put them on there, but they didn't let the glue set and the phone went crooked and they all fell to one side? Like, what are we doing here? Why is it like that?
Yeah, it does look really weird because when you look at the current iPhone, it makes perfect sense, right? It's a square and they're arranged in a triangle because the flash is on top and the LiDAR is on the bottom. And I guess the microphone is also next to the LiDAR. So it's like it's a square and all of the space of that square is being used, right? The third camera center because there's something above and below it, and it makes a lot of sense. When you look at this design, because the other stuff is moved off to the side and so now it's like you have this triangle, but then there's like this empty space, you know, on the side of the triangle. And it just – I agree. It looks kind of weird. Like it doesn't make sense for it to really be – a triangle anymore. It almost looks like it should be, I don't know, it could be a square if they had four cameras, or you could rearrange them somehow. I agree. It's like they stretched it out for the sake of stretching it out, and they didn't do anything to take advantage of the extra space that they get by stretching it out.
Exactly. So it definitely looks visually imbalanced. And the other thing that adds to that visual imbalance is the somewhat pointless little darker shade section on the back. audio listeners, I apologize. It's very hard to describe what this thing looks like, but I personally don't love the look of that. And on the iPhone Air, I don't know if it's going to be like that per se with the gap between the camera bar and that little like pad. I asked a couple people and they didn't know. But what I was able to glean is that shaded darker patch on the back is the real deal, and it will have that.
Here's my thing. If Apple did something like they do with the iMac, where there's the super light color on the front of the iMac, and then the back is the super deep, saturated, like nice color, if they could do that, they're not going to do that with the Pro iPhones because they don't do fun colors on the Pro iPhones. That's like a rule that they're never going to break. But if they did that, where you had like the body of the phone was like a lighter, less saturated color, and then the camera bump, or maybe not the camera bump, but at least that like duotone sort of rounded rectangle at the bottom, if that were like the deep color, and so you had like a nice visual design, maybe I could see that being kind of nice. It could almost be, I'm thinking about like the iPhone 5C a little bit, not really in that way, but almost like the 5C where you had the phone in the case and it was like kind of these fun colors. I could almost see it being kind of fun in that way. But this one here, which is like a light, like a gray, a mid-gray phone with a slightly darker gray on top, that is just ugly. I mean, you know, it's gray at the end of the day, but like that's ugly, and that's like, this is the Pro phone, so it's gonna be a boring color. So that's kind of what it's gonna be.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And you know, we just can't get fun colors on the Pros. That's the big problem. They just refuse to give us those enjoyable. I mean, honestly, the last fun color on the iPhone was the iPhone 13 in green. Remember, we got that spring color in 2022? That was fantastic. And since then, all the colors have been boring.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like if that's what the phone's going to look like, if you're going to buy like a white phone with a light gray secondary color, or you're going to buy like a black or dark gray with like a light gray color, or maybe a light gray with a dark gray secondary color. What else? There's like star. I don't know what other colors they have. There's a starlight or something, maybe not on the Pro. And then like whatever the color of the year is, like, I don't know. This color's kind of boring. Like maybe they'll have one good color. Maybe they can bring back like that light blue that they had on the 13 Pro. That was like a good color. I liked that one. If they have like one good color, maybe that can redeem that duotone. But I feel like for the other colors, like the white color and the black color, and maybe the gold one's the other one, I feel like those are going to be kind of boring.
Yeah, no, I agree. And even on the iPhone, the regular iPhone 16, I guess the way that they could do this for the colorful models, like the Air and the regular 17, would be similar to the way that they do it on the iMac, right? Where the back is like that really rich color, and then the front chin and the stand are like a lighter complementary shade. I think that is, as far as I can tell, how they would handle it with the camera bar, right? So like if the back of the phone is ultramarine, then the camera bar would probably be like a darker shade. And that I think could work depending on how they do it, because the problem is right now all of the iPhones, like, this is all a single piece of glass, right? So the color is consistent and the glass just changes thickness. So if they were to do a different color, same thing with the Pro models as well, to my mind it seems like the camera bar would not, as it is in this render, let me see if I can pull that back up. You know, in this render here, they show it as being a seamless piece of glass. I think that would not be possible for this. Maybe on the iPhone Air, but like from what I've seen with the Pro, I think there's going to be like a lip and a little gasket and then a different piece of glass in that camera bar. That is how I would imagine it going.
Yeah, but I do hope that the colors are a little bit like this, these are ugly. This is like, I guess the white phone and the gray phone basically. And this look is not it. If Apple can do something good with the colors, then I think it might actually look pretty good. And I think the duotone kind of look could be kind of cool. But the way that this is right now, I hope that this is not what it looks like, or at the very least that they have one color that their color of the year is good. Cause like realistically, I'm going to buy the color of the year anyways, unless it's like really horrible for some reason. And so hopefully at least the color of the year will be good for this. And I would hope it would be, if this is one of the big design changes, that they would really pick a good color to show it off. So we'll see what happens there.
I hope. I will say this is maybe a little bit out there, but as a closing thought, because I do have to run, somebody here said, I hope the shaded part is made out of metal. So in the middle, right? And that obviously, that wouldn't work because of the wireless charging, which I don't think they're going to give up. But what I could potentially see is like, what if we take that negative space? So not the camera bump, not the shaded back center of the phone, but all of those little spaces around it. What if that was metal?
Oh, I could, that would be interesting. Get a little bit, I will say, be good. I like the frosted glass back. I like the feeling of it, but I would be open to a little like sort of dual material kind of thing. It could, you know, make the design a little more interesting. It could make the phone feel a little bit nicer. I don't know what that would do to it, but yeah, maybe.
Might be less likely to crack if it was metal. Like I'm talking about, you would still have the frosted back glass on like the majority of the phone. But I'm saying like instead of the glass going all the way to the edges all the way around, it could basically be like the titanium would wrap around and then you would have like a glass insert and then there would be titanium all surrounding the camera. That might not be terrible. I could be convinced.
That could potentially, if they do it right, that could look cool. And like you said, maybe it could make the phone stronger, potentially. I'm not sure if it would work like that, but and it would certainly look different. So maybe, you know, maybe you're onto something there.
I hope. We can always cross our fingers. But unfortunately, if you were crossing your fingers for another episode of Dark Mode next week, you're going to be sorely disappointed. Because as it turns out, you said you're not available next week, right?
I'm pretty sure I'm not available.
Okay, because I'm then going to be gone on a massive video project that I'm working on. Not even for this channel. It's for the car channel, The Middle Lane. You guys should subscribe. I've got a bunch of stuff cooking for that channel. And that will cause me to miss the first 2 weeks of April as well. So April 20th, 420 Blaze It, I think, is going to be our next episode.
Okay, well, we'll... I don't know. Maybe we can do something in the interim, but if not, then we'll see you in a month.
Yeah, I think it's gonna be. I think the 20th might genuinely be our. I don't know that I'm gonna even be able to do a make good show in the meantime because it's gonna be a pretty crazy couple of weeks.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
Oof. Sorry. Anyway, heck. Well, we did it. We'll see you in a month, I guess. I've been your host, Luke Miani.
And I've been your host, Noah Rubin. Thank you for watching and have a great night. Watching or listening, have a great night.